This Is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. Sports play a big part in our American culture. The big three come to mind: football, baseball, basketball, all managed by successful professional leagues. Now, boxing has a long history worldwide and in the U.S., but it's not as popular here. The Gallup poll consistently finds that only 1% of self-identified sports fans rate boxing as their favorite. Today, where we live, we hear about boxing's history in Connecticut. Now, coming up, we'll talk with a Hall of Fame boxer about what brought him to the sport, and later, the state boxing commissioner will join us to explain why Connecticut hopes to make Bridgeport a boxing destination. Now, do you watch boxing? What is it about the sport known as the sweet science that appeals to some and turns others off? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266, email wherewelive at WMPR.org, and as always, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Now, joining me in studio is Richard Biondi. He's a social studies teacher, track coach at Branford High School. He's also an author of a couple of boxing books, and I like to think of you as a boxing historian. So, Rich, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me today.
So you've written two books about boxing. Tell us about those books.
Yes. As a child, I spent a lot of time with my maternal grandfather. His name was Joe Bichetti, and he was an immigrant from Rome. And when he came to America, he settled on Worcester Street in New Haven's Little Italy, and he was an amateur fighter. And as I was growing up, we would watch boxing matches together on Saturday, or he would talk to me about the great Italian fighters during the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. So boxing was always my favorite sport. I'm part of that 1%. And in the mid-90s, I was watching a movie on Rocky Marciano with a friend of mine, who I teach with at Branford High School, named Sal Zara. And at the end of the movie on Rocky Marciano, I told Sal that I was going to write a book on Italian-American boxers. And for the next 10 to 12 years, I interviewed over 400 boxers, trainers, managers, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, you mentioned the 20s to the 50s. That's considered boxing's golden age in this country?
Absolutely. And also here in Connecticut, I think people are not aware of the great boxing tradition that we have here in our state, going back to the 1920s, when at that time it was very common for each city to have athletic clubs. So here in Hartford, we had the Nutmeg Athletic Club. They had the Brooklyn Athletic Club in Waterbury. And these clubs sponsored boxing programs and also held weekly boxing cards. And there were larger venues also, like the New Haven Arena. So there's a great tradition here in Connecticut of boxing. Some of the greatest fighters of all time have come from Connecticut, including Hartford's own Willie Pep.
Now, we're going to hear about more about Willie Pep and other fighters like Nathan Mann in just a little bit. But can we talk a little bit more about these neighborhood, these clubs where these matches took place? And we think about the Northeast, you know, the very rich history of immigrants and the dynamic between these neighborhoods and these immigrant communities.
Absolutely. It all tied together. In our cities here in Connecticut, there were many, many boxers during the Great Depression. And these men came from their neighborhoods, which were predominantly at that time still ethnic enclaves. And very cleverly, the local promoters would pit the Irish fighter from one section against the Italian fighter from, you know, a rival neighborhood. And what would happen at these fight cards at these small venues, they would attract large crowds of neighborhood people rooting for their fighter. So this the Great Depression is when there were many, many boxing gyms throughout the state and weekly cards on usually on a Tuesday night, but also on the weekends. And these amateur and professional boxing cards were the growing area for fighters to develop their skills. And my area of focus was really on this time period because these men were warriors. They were a breed apart, so they would have to not only fight as often as possible, they also had jobs in construction or in factories, and they made almost no money. They would fight typically during the Great Depression for a watch, and then they would sell that watch and make maybe $5 or $10, and a week or two later, they were back in the ring ready to fight again.
This has been called the poor man's sport. Is that still the way this is seen today?
Absolutely. Boxing has always been a sport of the poor. Not many affluent or middle-class kids are going to go into boxing. Boxing is a way out of poverty for young men and today young women, because boxing now includes women. And this has been going on for a century here in America. And for many, it has given them the opportunity to have a better life for their children. And it starts with being willing to. As I've always thought of a boxer, I never fought. And I'm very honest, when I interviewed the 400 people that I did over that 10-year period, I was very honest to tell these world champions, Hall of Fame members, that I never fought as an amateur or a professional. I really have never even had a street fight. But to be a boxer is a special person. It takes a special person to walk up those three steps and climb into the ring and try to knock out a person that you probably do not dislike. But it's all in the name of trying to earn to make your children have a better life than the boxers did themselves.
I'm speaking with Rich Biondi. He's written a couple of books about boxing history, not only here in the region, but also worldwide. One of them is called Pugilistic Paisani, and he is a teacher at Branford High School. So we thank you for talking with us today about this. As we talk about boxing history in Connecticut, there are efforts to bring it back, and we want to hear you join the conversation. 860-275-7266. Let's take our listeners back to the golden age of boxing. Here we have a clip. It's from the 1938 fight at Madison Square Garden in New York City, where Nathan Mann, he was the heavyweight champion. Tell us a little bit about him before we hear the clip.
Nathan Mann was a great fighter who came out of really Hamden. He grew up in Hamden. He's always associated with New Haven. He trained out of New Haven, and he had a manager who came out of New Jersey. And he was a very talented fighter, very strong. He had a great career. It was too early in his career, 1938, for him to take on the immortal Joe Louis. All historians consider Joe Louis as one of the top 5 or 10 fighters of all time. And Nathan Mann was kind of pushed into that fight in 1938. Estimate 20,000 people from New Haven took the train to New York City to support their local fighter. Nathan did very well early in the fight, and he had even hurt Joe Louis. And then, of course, Joe Louis became probably woken up by Nathan's power and was able to knock Nathan out early, I believe in the second or third round. Mm. But Nathan Mann continued his career after the loss to Joe Louis and won about 75 fights during his career. And he was a longtime New England champion and a member of the Connecticut Boxing Hall of Fame.
And we have a clip from that 1938 fight. Let's hear it.
This is the main event. 15 rounds for the World Heavyweight Championship. The very capable young challenger from Hamden, Connecticut, weighing 1. Well, quiet, please, if you will, please. Thank you. Weighing 23.5, wearing purple trunks, Nathan Mann. There's your opportunity.
And so we hear the fans. The New Haven Register reported there was so much hype that additional trains had to be added to go from New Haven to New York. And you hear that hometown crowd cheering him on. And as you said earlier, he didn't win that match, but he still went down in the history books.
He did not win, but he represented himself very well against really, you know, most boxing historians are going to put Joe Louis up there as the number one or two heavyweight of all time. And there's no harm in saying you lost to Joe Louis. He did very well for himself.
Now, you mentioned Willie Pep. Willow the Wisp, I hear, is his nickname. Tell us about him.
Willie Pep, a local boy. He grew up in Middletown. Without a doubt, one of the most talented men to ever step into the ring. He won around 215 fights in his career, 212, I think, is the actual number. And just so beautiful in the ring with his footwork and his speed, the speed of foot and speed of hand, and really was considered just such a craftsman. He supposedly actually won a round in the 40s. He told his handlers before the round that he was going to win the round without even throwing a punch. And the person he was fighting was a top-ranked fighter, and using his footwork, he darted around the ring, bounced off the ropes, and actually won that round. And he is, without a doubt, one of the greatest fighters of all time. He had a legendary series against Henley Sadler. I believe they fought five or six times. And then after he retired, he stayed in the greater Hartford area and was very active in boxing events, boxing shows. He refereed boxing cards. And really, until the end of his life, he was a hero and a legend here in Connecticut.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. I'm speaking with Rich Biondi, a boxing historian, author of two books about boxing here in Connecticut. Before we go to break, Rich, you've interviewed lots of boxers. How are they different from other athletes?
First of all, I would say that they're willing to make sacrifices that not many other athletes would make. I mean, typically a boxer gets up in the morning, does their road work, goes to their job, primarily a blue-collar job, and then goes to the gym for 2 hours at night, and then does the same thing the next day. They were so giving to me, the boxers that I interviewed, dozens of world champions. I just integrated myself into their community and called them at home, and not one person refused to give me their time, articles out of their scrapbooks. And it was really amazing to me how just a teacher, which is a great thing, but a teacher was able to call a world champion and they would talk to me. I mean, think of trying to talk to Tom Brady. What are the chances of a person calling him and being able to talk to him and then go to his house and meet him and have lunch with them and go to banquets with him?
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. Coming up, we're going to talk to a boxer who was recently inducted into the Connecticut Hall of Fame. We'll find out more from Rich Biondi about our rich history here in Connecticut of boxing. And the question, what brings young men and now women to the sport? We'll find out. Join the conversation, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. Now, everyone knows Muhammad Ali. Controversial, no doubt. Many see him as a legend, one of the greatest boxers of all time. But what leads young men and now women into boxing? Is it watching icons like Ali growing up or something else entirely? Now, in studio with me is Rich Biondi. He's a boxing historian and author of Pugilistic Paisani, as well as another book. He's a teacher at Branford High School. And before the break, Rich, you were telling us a little bit about some of the icons like Nathan Mann and Willie Pep. But take us into the 80s and 90s and some of the local champs that are born and bred here in Connecticut.
There's been many ranked fighters who have come out of Connecticut from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and into today. And obviously in Hartford, where we are, Marlon Starling was a great world champion, as Travis Sims out of Bridgeport. And there are many contenders who are still in the state of Connecticut. A friend of mine, Sean Malone Sr., was a boxing trainer and just an amazing man, came to this country from Ireland with a suitcase and $5 in that suitcase. And Sean Sr. went into construction and became a boxing trainer. And he became a boxing trainer not to make money, but because he wanted to help kids stay off the street, as most of the trainers do. There's not money involved. Only the Freddie Roaches who train the people on HBO are making money. Mm. All the other trainers, like Sean Sr. and Sean Jr., who's currently training fighters out of their gym in Wallingford, they're doing it for the love of the sport and trying to help young people learn discipline and self-respect, self-esteem, and to stay out of trouble. Sean Malone Jr. Was the New England champion, southpaw, very talented, quick, and was ranked in the top 10. And he continues today to honor his father by training fighters out of their gym in Wallingford, Connecticut.
Now we have Sean Malone Jr. on the phone with us. Sean, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Now, we were just hearing a little bit of your history from Rich Biondi, who knew your father, the late Sean Malone Sr. I also want to let our listeners know you are a 2016 inductee into the Connecticut Boxing Hall of Fame. So first, congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's a big honor, and I'm just glad to be part of a historic group that's in there, and most of all to be in the hall with my dad.
So tell us about your father. Obviously, he trained you, and you know, about the sport of boxing for people who, you know, may not watch the sport. What is it about it?
The sport of boxing is it's the sweet science. It's a sport where certain people are bred to do it. It's not your average person that's going to get in there and do it. And you know, a little bit of it. It's starting to lose a little bit of the luster in Connecticut, and I'd like to see more of it be more supported with the state. There's a lot of great fighters in the state that are developing their skills, and I'd like to see it more on a mainstream and the local level, just so you can build your following in this state.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sean, you mentioned the sweet science. Explain what that means.
Sweet science, it's like a chess match. It's, you know, people think of it as a brutal sport. It's far from a brutal sport. You know, any sport can be brutal if you want to dissect it. But, you know, there's skills that are very hard to teach and that come natural to fighters with your head movements and your ability to move your feet and your hand speed and your hand and eye coordination. There's a big science to it, and if you get the right people around you, it's beautiful to watch.
Now, we heard a little bit about your dad, Sean Malone Sr. Tell us about him.
My father was an Irish immigrant that came to this country, and he was the greatest man I ever knew. He was 100% in my corner, and a true stand-up guy. He's the type of guy that would give you the shirt off his back to help you and never ask for anything in return. And I like to pride myself in that in my life, too. If I can help you, I'll do 100% for you and never look for anything in return.
And so when did you start training with him as a child? Did you watch the matches first and then decide this is something I want to do?
No, my father, I was always a little runty kid, and back when growing up, you know, there was always getting picked on, or there was always a fist fight, and he always wanted me to learn how to use my hands, and so I learned how to, you know, what he brought me in, started teaching me, and you know, I said, well, let's try a match, and he trained me for a year before I was in there when I was 8 years old. And before I even got into a match, and then it just, you know, went from there, went from state championships to regional championships to fighting in national tournaments to turning pro and making my mark as a pro until the injuries took over. And then now I'm on the outside looking in, trying to help these kids better themselves as individuals in life, as long as being a great athlete.
You said the injuries took over. So how long was your career before you had to retire?
It was about a 12-year career where it was strictly 100% boxing day in and day out. There's a toll. There's only a chosen few that get to the top of the tier. I was glad to be a part of it and travel all over the country and different parts of the world. And it's just a sport that I'd love to see more mainstream than it is right now.
Mm-hmm. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchil. I'm speaking with Sean Malone Jr. He's a trainer, former professional boxer, a 2016 inductee into the Connecticut Boxing Hall of Fame. He's a resident of Wallingford. And today we're talking about the state's boxing history. We are hearing about efforts to bring back boxing to Connecticut. And joining us now is Scott X. Esdale. He's chair of the Connecticut Boxing Commission. Scott, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And now tell us about, I don't think people knew that there's a boxing commission and you're the chair. So tell us about the efforts here in Connecticut.
Well, the boxing commission, there's actually 9 people on the boxing commission for the state boxing commission. I've been on the commission for 4 years and now I'm the chairman of the boxing commission. So out of the nine individuals, they select a chairman.
And what about these efforts to bring back boxing? We heard, Sean Malone Jr. is on the phone. I'm sure you know him. And he's talking about...
How you doing, Sean? What's going on?
How you doing?
Hanging in, brother. Hanging in.
All right.
But he was
listening to your interview. Did a great job.
And, Scott, Sean was talking about, boxing has lost its luster. He wants to see it brought back. So what does that mean in your capacity as chairman of the Boxing Commission?
I would beg to differ a little bit. It's definitely not as exciting as when we grew up. But I will say that at the same time, when Mayweather fought Pacquiao, it was a $140 million ticket. So people are definitely still interested in boxing. You could tell by the overwhelming amount of support worldwide that it received when those two guys fought. So I think that, the potential is there. People can look at the glass at half empty or half full, but I'm looking at it as half full, and I'm really excited about this new position that I've received, and we're going to really do some exciting stuff. I don't know if you guys talked about the retreat that we have coming up yet, but if you want to ask me about it, I'll talk about it.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later, but you made a comment, and I wanted to just talk a little bit more about, the money that's made on boxing. But does it trickle back down to these athletes in the ring? And, we were hearing from Sean that he had to retire after injuries, about the toll that the sport takes on these athletes.
Oh, yeah. I pretty much gave you the extreme in reference to how much money was made with Mayweather, but just like with LeBron James in basketball or Alex Rodriguez in baseball, everyone doesn't make the same amount of money. So there's different levels of the sport. There's definitely a lot of injuries in all sports, and there's different stories. But one thing that I would like to say is that what we're striving to do here in Connecticut is some really exciting stuff. And what we're trying to do is have a conversation and a dialogue about how we make Connecticut the center of the Northeast Corridor for boxing on the East Coast. And, one time there was a conversation about how they made Las Vegas, an individual who wanted to make the gambling capital of the world in the middle of a desert, and a lot of people laughed at him. And great minds came together, and now Las Vegas is the top, the number, I should say, the one of the top tourist capitals of the world. And then there was another individual, Mr. Disney, who wanted to create the amusement capital of the world, and he wanted to do it in the swamps of Orlando, and people laughed at him. And now he has the largest amusement capital of the world in Orlando. And what we want to do is have a conversation on how we can make Connecticut the boxing capital of the world. We don't have a professional baseball. We don't have professional basketball. We don't have professional football. But if we get the best minds around the table, and get all the stakeholders in the room and have a conversation about how we can make Connecticut, the capital of the East Coast, I think we could outdo Vegas. I think that we could outdo Atlantic City. And I think that we could be the premier fighting capital of the world. I mean, if you look at it, ESPN's headquarters is in Connecticut. NBC Sports headquarters is in Connecticut. The hedge fund capital of the world is here in Connecticut. Bridgeport, where we're going to be having this retreat, has a ferry that comes over from Long Island, where there's some of the wealthiest people in America living. They have great train stations right off of 95. You have Webster Arena. You have a great baseball field there for outdoor fights in the summertime. Diageo, the largest liquor company in the world, is right there in Norwalk, Connecticut. Subway is one of the largest fast food franchises in the world, is right there in Milford, Connecticut. We have some great, great pieces in Connecticut. If we connect the dots and put the best minds and the most creative minds around the table, we could do some awesome things here. It's just a matter of just getting the right people around the table, the most creative people around the table, the best architects and the best people that run restaurants and boutiques, and really do some really creative and fascinating things. And we could really get this place jumping. You know what I mean? You get the artists, the performers. We're right outside of New York and right between New York and Boston. Connecticut is really positioned well to be the premier place for boxing.
Well, America. Certainly, Scott, you have a lot of optimism. I want to turn back to the boxer, Sean Malone Jr. What do you think about these efforts? Can we make Connecticut the boxing capital of the world? What's it going to take?
We can, but the problem is when you have a small promoter trying to build his athletes and get him known in the state, it's hard to run a small show without the state chopping into everything. And we're trying to get fighters moving in the right direction and have them have a full room of people, but it's hard to get a show going in the state. And
you have to hook up with better promoters. And that's the key for us to connect with the best promoters in the area, and the best promoters in the area are not connected to the boxing industry, and that's why it's extremely important to develop relationships.
I'm connected to the boxing industry, and I've tried to.
I'm talking about promoters.
It's not worth it.
I'm talking about promoters. There's young people in our communities that need to be invited into the industry. They're in the hip hop industry. They're in the music industry, and if you notice. Now you see Roc Nation, meaning Jay-Z and those guys, they're all getting into the sports industry now. 50 Cent is now getting into the sports industry now. You have to let the young people in the industry.
I can understand letting somebody into the industry, but when you're working with the state on trying to get a show together, the state wants money right off the top.
Come to us and let us know what your obstacles are, and we're going to help you.
All right, Scott, let's listen to what Sean Malone. I was unsure of what he said at the end there. Sean Malone, what do you think the state needs to do to help bring the sport back?
I think the state needs to give the promoters in the area that are trying to put their fighters on local cards at least a tax break to the point where we can build a good following for fighters. And move them around where before you know it, we're having pro shows once a month in the state. And, that's the key to get these young fighters. And there's a lot of fighters in this state right now that are going elsewhere to fight instead of building themselves right here in the state.
Let me ask you this. When you throw a fight, do you get good turnouts?
When I put on a show, do I get a good turnout? Sure.
Okay, good. And what you're saying is that when you have these good turnouts, the reason why the fights are not on a regular basis is because of the taxes.
Taxes are killing us.
So what for a typical fight, how much are you paying taxes on a fight?
Taxes, it all depends on how many seats you have in the arena. The state's going to look
to take
fight on
how much
arena.
Are you paying for taxes?
I don't have any of my paperwork in front of me, but I didn't know we were going to get into a debate
saying,
about
it.
We're sparring on air.
You're going to come at me with it. It's not. I'm not trying to argue the point with you. I'm just trying to.
No. I'm just saying that. But whatever it is, we'll strive to reduce
so people
the
understand.
So you can do more fights.
So
that's the ultimate goal. I don't want to know all your specifics, but the bottom line. And I apologize for that. But the bottom line is that we want to encourage you to do more fights. That's the bottom line. We want to help.
We're trying to do more boxing. There's gyms all over the state that have, along with amateurs, there's professionals. And I don't understand why this state is struggling to have, it's losing its boxing swagger in this state. This state is big with boxing. There's Waterbury's loaded with boxers. New Haven's loaded with boxers. You know, you got a good heavyweights up in New London area, the Hartford area.
That's
there's
a
all great
That's
fighters.
A great kid.
In this
I agree.
Let me throw a tweet out there from a listener, Patrick. He writes, boxing will struggle without investments in police athletic leagues and public gyms. Gyms are now subsidized by white-collar boxers and fitness buffs. So how do we change that?
I didn't hear you well.
A listener tweeted, boxing will struggle without investments in police athletic leagues and public gyms. Gyms are now subsidized by white-collar boxers and fitness buffs.
I don't know if that's true. I think that the elephant in the room, ring run boxing.
That are not boxing run gyms.
We have some good gyms across the state of Connecticut.
Let me bring in a listener who's been holding. Jason's on the line from West Hartford. Jason, you're on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Were you able to follow a lot of that?
I'm treasurer of USA Boxing Connecticut, and we are the sanctioning body for amateur boxing throughout the state, and we've worked with Sean with Malone's Boxing Gym, and I also know Scott Esdale very well. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. So to bring boxing back in the state of Connecticut, and I think that both of your guests would agree, is that it starts with the grassroots. It starts with the amateurs. It starts with the youth programs. Like Patrick tweeted, the police athletic leagues, the public gyms. When we offer a safe, constructive, productive place for kids to go after school, to be in a safe environment, learn how to live a clean lifestyle, and excel in the sport that they love, that we will see the grassroots come up and will eventually be the feeder system for the professional ranks. In October, we held you mentioned Willie Pep, we held the Willie Pep Invitational at the Bond Ballroom in downtown Hartford. That was a fundraiser for USA Boxing Connecticut. It was a complete standing room only sellout. We had 11 bouts with national champions from in and around New England and New York. And we had the WBC, the World Boxing Council, and the International Boxing Federation. Those are world-sanctioning bodies that give out world championship belts. They supported our event with making customized championship belts for these kids. When these kids saw these belts, they went bananas, and they fought really hard for them. And we recorded the event. The event was a success financially and media-wise, and these are some of the things that we want to do from the USA Boxing standpoint.
I agree. I mean, if you hear what he just said, great fights are happening. There's a great spirit in the state of Connecticut. We just have to encourage it, promote it, lift it up, and take it to the next level. We have some great people in the state of Connecticut. They're doing great work. We just need to enhance it, promote it, and connect the dots with other people that are doing great things and do even bigger fights together. And like you stated, let's keep developing young people, encouraging young people to get involved in the sport. And once again, you can look at it in a negative way, or you can look at it in a positive way. We got to just keep pushing the positive. And I thank you for the great work that you're doing with USA Boxing. You have some great people on USA Boxing committee, and you just got to keep pushing. Just got to keep pushing. I'm telling you, Connecticut is going to be the premier state for boxing in this nation. It's going to happen.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. You're hearing Scott X. Esdale. He's the commissioner of the Connecticut Boxing Commission. Also on the phone with us is Sean Malone, Jr. He's a trainer, former professional boxer, and a 2016 inductee into the Connecticut Boxing Hall of Fame. Before we go to break, Sean, I wanted to ask you, just to piggyback on what Jason, who called in, was talking about, the impact of the sport in communities, what it's doing for youth. You know this very well. Tell us about how the sport can help these kids.
A lot of these kids come from broken homes, and this is their outlet. And, you know, amateur boxing in the state alone is great for these kids. It gives them their outlet and their self-esteem
And just the if you come to an amateur show, there's even a show this weekend, and Ansonia at Ortiz Boxing is putting on that. These kids are all respectful to one another. They have a great respect for one another. It's just great to see these kids show their talents in these amateur settings, and it's just the esteem that they get out of it is. And the experience of even traveling all over the country with the amateurs, it just it makes that better of a kid and better in life and in general.
Now, Sean, we're getting another tweet from a listener who writes, there are great gyms in Connecticut, but they charge fees. Amateur boxers often get waived, but there are fewer places to go for free that could maybe help these good young fighters that are in these neighborhoods. What's your take?
There are gyms that they have a monthly fee. I run a small gym that I don't take a penny from anybody, but it's such a small gym that I keep maybe a handful of kids and work with them at a time. And usually they'll get to the next step to become a boxer, or they come in and just get their work and they. Eventually keep their, get a job and they work through the community. But there are gyms out there if you look good, in the Bridgeport area, the New Haven area, the Hartford area, there's plenty of gyms up there. They're all over the state. If you go to usaboxing.org, you'll see all the registered gyms in the state, and you can find a gym that will suit you and, you could go from there.
Well, I want to thank Sean Malone Jr. He's a trainer, former professional boxer, 2016 inductee into the Connecticut Boxing Hall of Fame. Thank you so much, Sean, for your perspective. And I want to ask Scott, who's the state boxing chair, to stay with us because we want to find out a little bit more about efforts again. You've said you want to make boxing Connecticut the boxing capital of the world, and we want to hear a little bit more about those efforts on the state level. Also, we're going to hear from some listeners about how this sport appeals to all people from all backgrounds, including women. We're going to talk about that after this short break. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We know many of you tune in to Where We Live on your car radio or stream us live at WMPR.org. But if you can't listen live mornings at 9 or evenings at 7, rather, you can subscribe to Where We Live on NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or any podcast app. Now, coming up Monday, one of New England's most picturesque and storied churches, the United Congregational Church in Bridgeport, will soon be transformed into a mosque. On the next Where We Live, we learn the story behind the Islamic Community Center's recent purchase of this old UCC building and the strong interfaith partnership that made it possible. That's coming up on Monday. Now, today, we're talking about boxing in Connecticut. The sport has a rich history in the state, and now there's efforts to make it popular again in Connecticut's largest city. That's Bridgeport. And to tell us more again, we're joined by Scott X. Esdale, chair of the State Boxing Commission. Also in studio with me is author Rich Biondi, who's a boxing historian. We may go back to you a little bit later, Rich. But I wanted to turn back to you, Scott. Obviously, this is a very passionate subject for some people who follow boxing in the state. Tell us more about this retreat that you're going to be doing with the mayor's office in Bridgeport.
Well, what we're striving to do is just to have a conversation about how we bring some of the major players from this area to the table to have a conversation on how we could really make Connecticut very competitive with other boxing cities across America. And we have to evaluate, assess all the resources that we have in the state of Connecticut and compare it with other areas across the country, and then put the best minds around the table about putting a comprehensive plan together to implement. And that's what we're this is the stage that we're at now. We're just at a conversation stage. The plan is not concrete yet. We want to get as many people around the table as possible, open the doors for boxing, open the doors for people that are not even boxers. Sometimes we just have people that run gyms, that are managers, that are trainers. It's extremely important to have those people at the table, but we also have to bring other people that know how to do big events, that are promoters, that are trendsetters, that are into fashion, that are into restaurants, that are into hotel management, and bringing those type of people around the table to figure out how to enhance the sport in the state also. So we got people from the Department of Economic and Community Development, the Speaker's Bureau. We have people from ESPN. Mm-hmm. We have people from Embassy Sports. We have people from all over the state coming to the table to be a part of this conversation. Elected officials.
Now, Scott.
I heard of the young man from Wallingford. I forgot his name. What was his name again?
Sean Malone Jr. And I wanted to ask you just quickly before we go to a call, Scott. We know boxing's not mixed martial arts. There were efforts to bring MMA here in Connecticut. What happened there? And I know there's a big audience for MMA, also the UFC. How do you compete with that?
We have the elected officials at the table also, so they'll understand the tax situation and what are the handcuffs on promoters now that are hampering them to take boxing to the next level in Connecticut. And you know, there's a huge craze around UFC and MMA sports, not only here in the state but all across the nation. And how do we encourage to get more fights here in the state also? Also, I forgot to bring up, you know, everyone, I know a lot of people in the conversations that I have are all based around casino. We need to do all of our fights at the casino, but there's a lot of other opportunities outside of casinos. And Linda McMahon, who runs WWE, who's headquartered in Stamford, Connecticut, she does events, and her husband do events all over the world at venues that are not casino-oriented. So, you know, there was a huge fight at UFC fight at Madison Square Garden a couple of weeks ago that made tons of money. That made tons of money without a casino there. And WWE does events at facilities all over the world that don't have casinos attached to them. So that's why we're having this event at Webster Arena, figuring out how we could do more events at the XL Center. And then we want, as was stated earlier, that we want to do smaller events, but even in the smaller events, the local events, we want to make sure that they're fabulous events, top-notch events. They have top-notch support around them from the community and from the state and from the elected officials and from the state abroad to make sure that all of the events that we have, there's a tremendous amount of support around it.
Well, I want to thank Scott X. Esdale. Again, he's chair of the Connecticut Boxing Commission. That retreat in Bridgeport's happening next week. We'll have to circle back to find out where this goes, Scott, but I do thank you for your time today. And we're going to head now to this topic that I asked before the break, and that is, you know, boxing has often been seen as a masculine sport, but we know women are now getting into this this sport. And we have a caller now that's on the holding. Addie's calling in. Addie, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
So tell us about what brought you to boxing.
Well, originally I was brought up in Brooklyn, New York, during the bad times. I fought in the street a lot. I ended up in, about 18, I ended up in Miami Beach trying to start a whole new life. I met somebody over there who had family here, Hartford, Connecticut, and I figured, let me give Hartford, Connecticut a try. Ended up in Bellevue Square back in the day, fighting again, and that's when I met Johnny Duke. Back in the day, and Johnny Duke asked me, you know, why don't you come to the gym and fight? So I went to the gym, and he put me in at the time with Mike Oliver. Mike Oliver was a little kid at the time, and I got my butt whooped by a little kid, and I got mad, left, told him I don't need to do this, and he said, well, if you want to learn, come back, and I ended up coming back a few days after.
Do you find more women are getting into this sport? What are you seeing out there?
I think a lot. I think women have been in the sport. I just think that people don't, they think it's a masculine sport. They don't give women a chance. And I know when I was pro, plenty of women, I mean, we did as much work as the guys did. And I don't think people even like, people always, you know, told me our women don't belong in the sport. But no matter what, we still trained.
And why would they say that women don't belong?
I don't know. I think, you know, it's like a lot of males would tell me that, oh, you guys don't belong in the sport. You know, it's somewhere you could get hurt. But there's a lot of tough women out there, a lot of tough women. And I trained with a lot of tough women, like Kaylee Reese from Rhode Island, Shelly Vincent, her fiance, you know, Jennifer, Salinas, you know. There's a lot of tough women out there.
Well, thank you for sharing a little bit about what brought you to the sport. I want to turn back to our in-studio guest before the end of the show again, Rich Biondi, who has written a couple books about boxing. You know, you were turned on to the sport from stories from your grandfather, who was a boxer. What do you think from this conversation about the bringing it back to the Connecticut, hearing how the sport has changed? Where is it going, Rich?
Well, before I would like to comment just on what the previous person mentioned. Johnny Duke, we can't have a conversation about boxing here in Hartford or Connecticut and not talk about Giulio Gallucci was his real name. And he grew up in the streets in Hartford, got into trouble. And for decades, 50 years, he trained fighters out of the Charter Oak Gym and the Bellevue Gym. And as Sean mentioned, he developed great amateur champions, professional fighters, champions. But there were hundreds of other kids who looked to him as a father figure. And he helped kids stay off the streets and gave them an opportunity to develop self-respect and learn discipline and the difference between right and wrong. So that's what boxing really is, I believe, at its core. Yes, it's an opportunity for a handful to make a lot of money. The sport's never going to disappear. It's always going to be in existence. It's been around since the Greeks and the Romans. And I hope that with the efforts of the state boxing chairman and his the people on his commission, and the dedicated trainers like Sean and Brian Clark in New Haven, that if it's going to start from the grassroots, it seems like those people are in place to bring the sport back to its heyday, where there were weekly shows throughout the state at large and small venues.
And when we look at boxing, it's more than meets the eye. It's not just a violent sport.
All sports have an element in violence, I think. There's a lot of respect between boxers. I learned that very quickly. Guys who were rivals, like Jake LaMotta and Tony Zale, respected each other. There are Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward. After they fought, there was a mutual respect. And as I believe it was Sean who said at these tournaments, there is a lot of respect between the boxers. And it's just a different type of person who goes into that sport. There's a lot of respect they receive in the community, the boxing community, and also in the sports community because of the fact that they are a rarity. It's a breed apart. It truly is the professional boxer.
Rich Biondi is a boxing historian, author of a couple of books, including Pugilistic Pisani, A Concise History of the Italian and Italian-American Boxing Champions, a social studies teacher and track coach at Branford High School. Thank you for coming in. I enjoyed this hour, learned a lot.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure, and I really enjoyed myself.
Our show is produced by Jeff the Terrible Tyson and Miss Lydia Brown. We're going to have some fun as we go. We're going to have fun as we go out into the weekend. Thank you to Lydia Brown. Our technical producer is Kyone Wolf. Kyone. WNPR's executive producer is Katie Tularski. There's my cue. It's time to wrap up. Check out WNPR.org/where we live for more about the show. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.